Welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. By combining haunting vocals, bass-heavy beats, and elements of synth pop, Josephine Olivia and Drew Scott create the experimental dreamscape that is Black Sage. Josephine, an Annapolis native, sings and writes in Black Sage, which released their second full-length album, Shivers, last year, and she's also working on a solo album. Josephine has been open about the arc of Black Sage. She and Drew were a couple, and now they're not. And she discussed some of the frustrating assumptions people make about her relationships and the band. Josephine is intimately familiar with the challenges women in music face, and she talked about some of the ways she uses Black Sage's live performances to empower women and assert herself to public space. She also talked about her concerns for the Baltimore DIY scene, looking back on her earlier music, and self-discovery. Just a warning, there is some profanity in this episode. Here's my conversation with Josephine Olivia. Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Annapolis, Maryland. I was there until the age of 18 and ended up going to Florida, which was an interesting experience. And then I've been here about 5 years, so I love it in Baltimore.
What was growing up in Annapolis like?
Very white and conservative. And it wasn't, I mean, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful town, but there's not much diversity going on there. I was lucky enough to have a great education at a private school, but besides that, and the fact that my mom is still there, I'm sort of like, it's not my favorite place, really.
Was it clear to you when you were young that that wasn't the type of place you always wanted to live?
Yeah, I didn't feel that I fit in very well there. But, you know, everyone grows up, figures out what fits for them, you know, like my brother likes that sort of community. And then, you know, it's like, everyone's different. Everyone's got their own sort of niche that they want to be in. So
you're not resentful of it?
Oh, no. It is what it is, you know. Like, I'm lucky enough to have, like, certain opportunities given to me, you know, and I don't take that for granted, but I definitely choose to be in a different setting, I think, as an adult, so.
What made you feel different from everyone else when you were younger?
I think within the school itself, people we're more on the line of, like, you know, becoming a doctor, becoming, you know, going to school for a lot longer, going to college, and then, you know, who knows what else after that. But I just never was interested in going to college after that. And I just knew that I wanted to play music, and I didn't know if it was a possibility, but it's always, you know, been a dream of mine. So, you know, also the whole, like, kids rolling up in their BMWs and their Lexus and, like, all these nice cars, and it's just kind of like, I don't know. It seemed excessive to me at that age, you know? But again, like, some people are just raised into that. So, I don't know.
Did your family expect you to go to college? Was that a point of issue?
Definitely. I mean, since the school I went to was pretty small, it was sort of like everyone was under a microscope, like, had to, you know, go to college or at least apply. I got into college in Philly for photography, but realized about 5 days into it that I wasn't gonna try because it just wasn't my passion. And I think I just sort of picked something just to go and sort of appease the masses at that time. Not to say that school isn't for people. I just personally, I know that maybe down the line I'd want to, but now it's just not the time for me. And the way that the structure of it all is, you know, it's you spend all this money to get a degree and you might not even need it for the job that you're going into. So it seemed a little redundant and silly to me at the time.
Were you always so strong in your convictions, and did you feel you knew yourself well enough to be able to make those decisions, or were you ever, like, scared, like, maybe I should go to school or something like
that?
Oh,
yeah. I mean, all the time. I definitely questioned it, especially while driving down to Florida after leaving Philadelphia. I was like, well, am I just, like, totally messing up right now? I don't know. Being young is always confusing anyway. Growing up is a hard thing to do, and I think I just kind of knew that I didn't want to go down that path. So I try to trust my gut more often than not, because it's usually, you know, sort of right on.
What was your first introduction to music as a kid?
So my mom was actually in a Renaissance band when she was my age, and younger actually, like, I guess in high school through her 20s, and she always really opened up the world of music to me. Like, that was something I really aspired to be. She, like, had her own vinyl and everything, and we put it on and listened to it. So that was something about that was really magical, and I really, like, appreciated that. And I felt super lucky to have a mom that was really open-minded, not forcing me to be one thing or another, super accepting. And she showed me, you know, all sorts of music, which I'm really thankful for. But I think that initial, like, the story she told me about that lifestyle was always really, really appealing to me. So I think that sort of fueled the fire, you know.
What kind of stories, like, what kind of stuff was she doing as a musician?
Well, they actually got an old school bus and gutted it out and then put beds in it and everything. And they just toured the country in this old bus. And I loved that sort of, I don't want to say gypsy lifestyle, but you know what I mean? Sort of like not really tied down or committed to one place, just sort of going wherever and making music. So I just love that.
Did you travel at all when you were younger, or have you done much traveling?
I traveled a little bit when I was very young, lucky enough to go out of the country and see some places. But since I was an adult, I guess really all I've seen is Florida and some other parts of America that I don't know. Mostly East Coast, but, you know, that's one of my dreams, I think, was the other thing, being able to travel and make music. That was definitely my big, the thing that I most looked forward to, so now it's sort of coming true.
Do you remember your first favorite band or musician?
Oh, let's see. I remember being really obsessed with Kylie Minogue, like real unhealthily obsessed with her. Just everything, her aesthetic and her voice, and just, it was just kind of queer and great and fun. I love her, still do.
Yeah.
I work out and listen, well, when I do work out, which is like never, but
great workout music though. That's a fantastic suggestion.
Dude, seriously, like go for a run, you will like never stop. It's good.
When did you start getting into the kind of stuff that you're into now, or just, you know, different stuff than those childhood pop obsessions?
Honestly, I didn't really listen to, like, a lot of people compare our type of music to like Portishead and things like that, sort of experimental. I'd never really listened to that when I was growing up. It wasn't until we started like sitting down and actually writing the music that this sound sort of organically came up between us. But after we started writing that, I did a little bit of listening to that stuff, and I guess it just all sort of fit together, and I just fell in love with that style a lot. But I've always tried to keep an open mind with all music. I don't want to write anything off, because you can learn something from all of it, you know.
How did you discover that you could sing?
I just never shut up. I sang a lot as a kid, and I picked up a guitar when I was, I want to say like 11 or 12. There was a rough time when I was 10. My stepdad died, and I sort of had all these feelings and wanted to write about it, and song just sort of came naturally when all of that was unfolding. And, you know, I stopped on and off, but I would always come back to it as a way of releasing a lot of feelings and sort of like therapy for me, you know. So, I've just always loved to do it.
Was that a private thing for you? Or would you ever perform for family or do open mics or anything?
I was very anxious. I didn't want to play in front of anyone ever. If I did, I'd want them to like turn around or like keep the lights off. It was just it's a very intimate thing to open up and sing, you know, say these words and actually put feeling into something like that. It wasn't until I don't even know how old I was. It must have been 15, 16 when I did an open mic against my will, honestly. Everyone was like, "You're coming, you're going to do it." And it was the most horrifying thing that's ever happened, but also the greatest, too. It's sort of the same feeling I have now when I perform. It's like you hate it in a way, because it's just, it's intense and it's vulnerable, but it's addicting. It's like you can't stop doing it now.
How do you look back on music or performances from your past?
I don't like to. I think I've learned a lot from, you know, sometimes people take video and stuff. I've learned how to change certain things, but I honestly don't like to go back and look at it, because some of it is really awkward, and I don't know. I try to just look forward instead of backwards, I guess.
And that's a luxury that many of us don't have if you've grown up with the internet to some extent. I mean, like people, older people don't have to have that same document of, their anything embarrassing from the past.
Nothing. My shit is all out there. for real, it is all out there. I mean, it's awful when Facebook has that time hop or that memories you might like. It's like, no, I really don't want to see that.
No, bury that deep down.
Please bury it as deep as possible.
So what brought you to Florida?
I was dating this guy and he was from Miami, I guess, initially. So we moved to West Palm Beach because he wanted to go back. And I was like, well, why not? I haven't ever been there. Well, I guess I had visited a long time ago, but never lived there. And it's just a strange place. I know within Florida there are different, places. There's different cultures. Miami is definitely different than the rest of it. But yeah, I'm not going to go back, probably.
The Florida chapter is closed.
Yeah, it's closed, definitely. I don't want to say never, but no, will not.
So then what brought you to Baltimore?
So after Florida, I ended up moving to Annapolis again, and I stayed with my mom for a while, and I actually started doing drugs and, partying too much and just, being a total wastoid, and it was not my favorite time in my life. So I actually met somebody and they were like, why don't you just come live with me? And I was like, well, you know what? I'm not doing anything else. And that was sort of a time when I wasn't making music. I was really depressed, just felt really stagnant. So I said, fuck it. And we just loaded all my stuff into a car and drove up there, and that's where I stayed. And it took a while for me to get into playing music here and really feel like I could do that again. But yeah, I felt really comfortable once I started to open up here.
Why did it take you a while to get involved?
I think for a while I told myself that I couldn't do music, I wasn't good enough. The normal self-doubt sort of thing that always seemed to spring up in my own mind. But at a certain point, I just picked it up again, and I remember I wasn't working that often. I was pretty broke, couldn't really go out, and I would just lock myself in my room and play for hours, pretty much the whole day. And then I started playing at Two Boots over near Micah, because I worked there, and I just kept doing it and kept pushing, even though it was still really scary and I didn't think I was good enough. And again, that self-doubt is on repeat, but it was such a good feeling. And even getting a little bit of feedback from anyone saying, oh, I really enjoyed that, it's that was enough for me to just want to keep doing it,
Was there something that made you feel good enough? Or if you don't yet, what would it take to make you feel worthy of, taking up space in that way?
I try to now tell myself that I am worthy. And I think it's also part of growing up, trying to fit into a certain place or be a certain type of person. And I think you just have to shut that voice up and say, you don't have power over me. I can be whatever I want to be, and you just have to be persistent. And now I do feel like this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm in the right place at the right time,
Did you immediately connect with Baltimore?
In some ways, yeah. I felt really accepted here. I felt pretty comfortable. And at the time, I was a bit of a wastoid. But, I think I met some really great people right away and people I'm still friends with today and hope to be with, the rest of my life. And I think after going to shows here and everything, too, that also opened up a lot of it was just sort of a new look on everything. I felt like I could be involved here, and try new things, which is really important.
Is that what got you out of that kind of wastoid period?
I mean, I'm still in it, at times. I think it's all about balance. I like to think so. But I think for me, I have really intense highs and really intense lows. So it's sometimes hard for me to pull out of those wastoid times. But it's all a learning experience and just day by day.
So when you were on your own, what kind of music were you making?
When I first started out here, it was mostly folk. I don't want to call it pop because it was just me and a guitar and very simple. And I'm actually working on a solo album right now, which should be out in the next couple months. which is a little different. I've switched to electric, and it's super reverbed out and just sort of like dreamy. But yeah, I started with that. I didn't really know what sound I wanted initially, but I found that the more I play with other people or more I play alone, the sky is like really the limit with that. You know, you can make so many different types of music because I feel connected to so many different genres that I never want to stop trying different things, you know. But at first, yeah, it was just super stripped down, like singing over acoustic.
Do you ever feel constricted by like being put in a box of, you know, one type of band, one type of musician? Do you think that's something like musicians struggle with?
I think so, for sure. Especially being a woman playing music, there's always that assumption, like, I don't know, you can only do so much. And that in itself is constricting, and it's mostly brought on by men, older men in the industry. Not all of them, but definitely a handful.
Hashtag not all men.
Yeah. Yeah. But I try, again, it's like keeping an open mind and don't assume that every older white dude is going to be a jerk. And then, you know, not be scared by the way they can be condescending to you. You know, you sort of just have to stand up and be like, this is my place. You make your own space within that community. But I don't feel put in a box anymore. I feel like I said, I can really do anything I want with it, you know. And depending on who you play with, you can get a totally different sound.
In those early days, who were your influences? Who were your favorite musicians? And have those changed much?
Yes, I feel like I try to, like I said, keep an open mind and listen to as much as I can. Definitely a big influence with Kurt Vile. And still, I love his music still. And his band, War on Drugs. It's a good one.
I just saw Kurt Vile on New Year's Eve. It was
really?
So good.
Where was it?
In Philly at the Fillmore.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a great show. Yeah.
I remember a few years back when I finally recorded an EP. It was just like 4 songs. Was super excited about it, like bouncing off the walls, and I got kind of drunk, and I saw that Kurt Vile was coming to Baltimore, so I took it upon myself to message him on Facebook and ask if he wanted to go get coffee, and no response, of course. So I showed up to the show and again got like a little tipsy because I was so nervous, and I brought an EP with me, and after the show, which was great, tried to talk to him and give it to him, and he was, you know, he shrugged it off a little bit, like, whatever, this girl is just in my face and I don't want to talk to her. But yeah, so that happened and I'm really embarrassed about it. But you got to get yourself out there.
You do. Yeah, everyone's been at that point.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. You miss every shot you don't take. That is my motto.
Is that Wayne Gretzky?
I don't even know.
Michael Scott?
Pretty much. Yeah. I go by a lot of Michael Scott truisms.
Oh yeah, great way to live your life.
Oh yeah, it's gotten me really far.
Tell me about the forming of Black Sage.
So that was a few years back. I met Drew and we started dating. And we both made music on our own. So I did my, you know, solo acoustic thing. He did rap and like some hip hop stuff. And one day we were just hanging out and he showed me a beat and I started singing over it. And it just like really came together. And that became, you know, an obsession and sort of took over our relationship. And then that fizzled out, you know, but we kept the band going and just kept pushing with it. And a lot has come from it, you know, but it all started in a basement with pizza.
Was there ever a consideration of ending Black Sage when you and Drew broke up?
Oh my God, yeah. Yes, oh my God. It's really hard to like break up and still be around each other and like make music because you might either like hate them or like, you know, not want to see them, which I don't. Drew is great. But, you know, it's really hard. But I think we both realized that the reason we were in each other's lives was just to make music. And I think sometimes that's a really important thing to step back and look at. Like, maybe we're not meant to be romantic, you know? On top of that, I was sort of figuring out that I'm, like, pretty gay. So that was definitely a factor. I felt like I hadn't really gone out and experienced my own sexuality and figured myself out enough to commit, you know, at that time. So that was definitely part of it. But, you know, I'm super glad that we're at this point where we can just like still hang out, make music and be good.
So beyond the obvious, like, you're not dating anymore, what was the transition like to go from couple to not couple, and what changed in those dynamics or in your writing process?
Well, it's we lived together, so that was definitely a difficult transition at the time. But basically, that was also a big time of me getting fucked up and sort of shutting out the world. I was super depressed at the time. I think he probably was too. But I think those are the times to write, mostly. That's when I find I'm the most creative, even though I hate everything. Man, I don't know. It was definitely a rough time because we still had shows and we still tried to get together to write. But it took some time for us to, you know, not see each other. And at a certain point, it just became like we were friends and it's totally fine. And, you know, now we're just good friends. So it's nice that we somehow maintained a friendship through that and a band, you know. I'm pretty surprised, honestly.
You talked about, like, writing in difficult times of your life. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's a way to process it. Does that process actually make you feel better? Or what function does writing and music serve at that time in your life?
I think sometimes it's really hard to, if I'm super depressed, it's hard to pull myself out of that even enough to write something down. But if I can, it either throws me and hurls me into a deeper depression, or it's actually like, okay, I'm working through some of these issues that I'm having. I think now, as opposed to then, it sort of does help me get past it a lot more and sort of sort through my feelings. It's an excellent tool. I think the older I got, I sort of figured out how to harness it rather than let it completely consume me, you know? You know, of course, I get mad, crazy depressed and can't leave bed sometimes, but I think, you know, it's definitely been a way to cope with that. So it's definitely helped.
Have you and Drew ever dealt with, like, frustrating assumptions about your relationship or about being in a relationship or not?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, still people ask about it. And I'm like, no, we haven't been dating for, like, a long time. I mean, it's been, like, 2 years or more. God, I don't even know now. It's been, like, 3 years. I don't know. But, yeah, people still always assume that. And it's just, you know, you just got to be like, no, not a thing.
Yeah, it's something I, like, would have never brought up, and I never ask my podcast guests, like, about their personal lives or anything, but I had read about the two of you having dated. And so I wonder if, like, really early on in the beginning of the band, when you were dating, it's like, yeah, we're dating, but we still don't want to be asked if we're dating. Was that the case at all?
Yeah, it's sort of, like, frustrating. It's like the way someone would interview a woman versus a man, sort of, like, if it's, you know, interviewing a woman, it's like, oh, what are you wearing? Like, what's up? It's all, like, physical. So, like, to me, it's sort of like, why is my relationship of any concern to you, really? You know, I think that's something I've always sort of wondered, why, like, that's one of the main points people ask us, like, about the band. And it's like, no, it's not about that, you know? I want this to be focused on music. On another note, like, I have no problem talking about any personal life stuff, but that's definitely been, like, a main point. Anytime we've been interviewed, I'm just kind of like, all right, it's over.
What is something that you don't get asked that you wish you were asked?
I think what I like to talk about is my experience of, like, being a female in the music business. I think that I haven't really been asked that much. So when you asked me to do this podcast, I thought that was kind of an awesome way to sort of have an open conversation about it in, like, a safe space, which is nice. But, I mean, for the most part, people ask about the music, which I want to talk about, of course. But yeah, that's definitely a point to me.
Well, regarding your experience as a woman in the music business then, I mean, like, I'm all ears.
Yeah.
And have you had the same, you know, I don't want to say all of them are horror stories, but, you know, it can verge from annoying, petty things to horror stories of, like, the roadies, you know, like, asking Drew how, you know, the mic should be set up instead of you and stuff. Like, do you have
literally
experiences
forever,
like that?
Forever. It is, yes, it's constantly that way. I mean, people sometimes, we do, like, visuals a lot of times. We'll have a projection of something when we're playing, and a lot of times, like, I'll go talk to the sound guy or I'll go talk to, like, whoever's handling that, and it's like, they won't even talk to me, like, even after I've been the one coming to them. Like, they'll go to him, and it's just kind of like, come on, like, this is ridiculous. Like, you think I have no reason to be here? And that's been an experience of mine throughout all of it, you know? And I think it's just like, the older I get, the more I'm just like calling people out, because fuck that. Like, women have such a space in music and in art. And I think that luckily women have been coming together and like creating a larger space for us, you know, in that arena. But I think it still takes time and discussion, communication, and just like really opening up and talking about it for people to really understand what women have to go through day to day, and, you know, and in art and anything creative.
How did you get to the point where you were able to call people out on that more? Was that difficult for you at first?
Well, it's something that in your head you're doing anyway. So I just opened my mouth and was like, can you fuck off? No, I think that I'm just tired of bullshit. And being a woman just in day-to-day life, you just get so much shit that it's like, at a certain point, you're not going to take it anymore. You know, you get hollered at on the street, you get catcalled. It's like, ugh, it's just so annoying.
And it seems like music can go, for a lot of women I've talked to at least, like, can go from what is supposed to be like the escape from all of that to something that just exacerbates it.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely is. And people tend to ask me because, like, you know, the outfit I wear on stage is like pretty scandalous and, you know, risque, I guess. But that isn't a way for me to flaunt my body, or, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a way to be like, I'm here and I'm a woman and I'm powerful, you know? And I think it's like a certain way that people perceive women. I just want to break down certain barriers that men, I think, have put up for us.
What do you try to communicate in your live show?
That you can be sexual and you can be a woman, and that's not something you should be ashamed of. And I think growing up, I always felt ashamed of my body because men would sort of, men look at you a certain way. And again, I'm not saying all men, this is not a blanket statement, but men can look at you and sort of, it's, you know, real creepy sometimes. But I think I feel really powerful now, and when I am on stage singing about what I'm singing about and wearing what I'm wearing, I feel like a really, you know, strong, powerful woman. And I think that's a feeling that every woman should feel at some point, hopefully forever.
What does the name Black Sage mean?
Well, actually, we sort of just came up with it. Honestly, there's not a whole lot of meaning behind it. I liked the idea of incorporating sage, because it's sort of, you know, when you smudge your house, or you sort of, it's like you're opening up for new energy. And, you know, I know it's sort of a little hippy dippy, but I like that idea. Sort of, it's spiritual without it being, because I'm an atheist, really, honestly. I don't know what I am, honestly, but I'm not.
You don't need to give a definitive answer on this podcast.
Mostly just I like the imagery of it, and I think it's sort of a mysterious name enough that it sort of goes with our motif, you know?
I know a lot of musicians hate doing this, but for people who may be listening who haven't heard Black Sage, how would you describe your sound?
I would call it like dark synth pop, sort of experimental. There's a lot of things. I think it has evolved a lot from what it was initially. Like, this last album is definitely more jazzy and experimental than the first one, which I would say is super stripped down and, like, industrial almost, 90s, yeah.
Do you feel that your albums represent, like, a certain time in your life? Are they time capsules in any way? Because I have read that they a little bit coincided with stages in your relationship, whether, like, getting together, breaking up. How do you view an album after it comes out?
I definitely think that it is like a little time capsule. Like, the first album or the EP was sort of us getting together. The second one is us breaking up. And this one is sort of our own relationships, you know, not involving each other. I tried to not make it all about sex this time, but a lot of it is about sex. And then I think anything I've written in the past definitely is sort of like time stamped of what was actually going on in my life at the time, you know.
Is it ever challenging to be vulnerable in your music? Is vulnerability something you're going for? And how did you get to that point with Drew?
I think you can't really, if you're being honest, you can't help but be vulnerable, you know? And I think that's something about music that I love. It's like, I could talk all day about whatever it is, but when it comes to, I think when I'm singing, it's sort of a real vulnerability that I don't really, I think that's why it's so intense for me, you know, when I play, because it is like a release. It's like really me opening up and expressing myself. I know that sounds cliche, but I think it's important to embrace those times though, you know, I think everyone should at some point.
What has been your experience and relationship with the larger Baltimore music scene?
I love Baltimore for its music scene. I think it's diverse. I think it's inclusive. I think it could always be more diverse and inclusive. But I think a lot of shows are very accessible. And I think that I try to play on bills where it's as diverse as possible, not just like an all dude, like white dude band, you know, because that's not to say that's bad, but it's like, you know, there's so much out there. And it's like, for a while, that was really a big thing, you know? And I think being on shows with, you know, POC, queer, anything, any minority, like, I think it's super important to lift people up who haven't had a voice, you know, and give them space to be heard.
Has Baltimore, either as like a physical place or the people in the music scene, influenced your music and writing?
I think so. I mean, this is where I really started writing and sort of like coming into my own. So I'd say it really shaped a lot of who I am and what I'd like to represent and sound like.
Do you feel you have come into your own?
I think so. I think we're always figuring out who we are, and maybe we never really know, but try to chip away a little bit every day. Definitely figuring out that I was queer was a big, I don't know, it was like a weight to like really accept that and like come out. And I haven't been like happier than I am now, honestly, like in the relationship I'm in now, just everything. I feel really fortunate, even though, you know, day to day sucks sometimes, it's life. But, you know, I think opening up your mind and really just like letting yourself be who you are and saying it's okay to just be me, however that is really important.
I'm curious what you think about role models. Do you think they're important? Do you, like, would you ever want to be called that or considered that? Just when you're saying coming to terms with yourself, that can definitely be like an inspirational story to other people. But I wonder if you buck at that at all.
If I inspire someone to be who they are more and accept themselves more, then that's amazing. Like, that to me is great. You know, I'd love to be a positive, you know, force in someone's own mind, whatever. I don't really see myself that way, but if I am to someone, I think that's great. And if I can be of any help to someone struggling with, you know, sexuality, with anything, if they're, you know, want to be a musician, if they want to do anything, I think that would be great. I hope I am. I hope I'm a positive sort of force for people.
I saw you posting some stuff about the closing of the Bell Foundry.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you know, are you concerned about the state of the Baltimore DIY community or the arts scene at all?
I definitely am. I think a lot of what's happening in Baltimore now, especially that area, is gentrification. I think we all need a space to create, and the Bell Foundry was definitely that for, like I was saying, like POC, queer, just people that aren't, people that haven't had the ability to feel safe and feel like they have a place to really open up and be themselves. So when we shut down these DIY spaces, it really inhibits growth and creativity from the people that can make a city a real city, you know? And then it just gets whitewashed. It's definitely scary, but I mean, everyone won't stop doing it, you know? There's always going to be underground. That's just the nature of the arts, I think.
How did you get involved with Friends Records, and what has that relationship been like?
Friends Records has been awesome. So back, it was a long time ago, I guess it was right when Black Sage started, I still have a great friend, Allie Baldwin. She was friends with Jimmy, who is the owner or founder of Friends, and she was talking to him about my music, and I gave him my EP in a brown paper bag, and he listened to it and loved it. And Black Sage definitely took the forefront after that. I mean, I've been talking about doing a solo album for like years now, like since I moved here. But I think Black Sage has just taken more attention and has gotten definitely a great response. So we've just sort of ridden the wave in that way. But yeah, Friends Records has been a great way to meet some incredible people in the scene and collaborate and just actually make great friends that I still, you know, like I said, I hope to have a long time from now.
What do you want to get out of this solo album, you know, that's separate from Black Sage?
I think it's just a different sound. And I think if it's all, I don't know, I'd like it to just be from my perspective. Not to say that a lot of Black Sage isn't, you know, my writing, because a lot, you know, lyrically, I'd say majority of it is. Not to say Drew didn't, you know, write some of it too. But I want this to just be from me, you know, and I miss playing an instrument because in Black Sage I just sing. So it's nice to play guitar and like sort of go back to my roots, but expanded, I guess, sort of more thought out.
How collaborative is Black Sage? What's the writing process like?
Basically, Drew will come to me or send me an email if we can't meet up with beats, and it'll sometimes just be the bare bones. Sometimes it'll have synth over top, and he'll just send me, you know, it's like a 2-minute clip, sometimes longer, and usually he'll come over and he'll just play it, and we'll record right away, and I'll just kind of freestyle over top of it to get an initial melody. And if I have some lyrics that I have lying around, or, you know, I constantly am writing like little things down because I can't remember anything for shit. So once that happens, I'll sort of expand. And if we have the time that day, we can usually get through a song, and then we'll go back and, you know, fine tune it. But for the most part, I really like to go with the first cut of something because that's the first feeling I have when I hear it. So a lot of times we'll just go with that freestyle of what it is.
You mentioned going in a more like jazzy and experimental direction with this record. Are there any other ways that you feel Black Sage has evolved over the past few years?
I think that in how Drew has done the beats, like I said, the first EP was really stripped down and like sort of industrial. I think he has really gotten incredible at his craft. You know, he's tried new things and really like pushed himself. And I think that shows a lot in this new album. And I think the next album is going to be even more evolved. I don't want to stray far away from what we started as, but I really do like the direction it's all been going. And we don't know how the next one's going to sound. I have no idea. But seeing as each one has sort of changed and grown and moved in a different way, I think it's good to always have a different type of album. Like, I don't think having the same album over and over again is, I lose interest pretty quickly. So when, you know, even artists that I'm interested in do that, I'm just sort of like, okay, like I've heard this already. You know, I want to still have my attention on it. I want to be enticed, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, just keep it fresh.
So would you rather like take a bigger risk and make a potentially like not as good album than just repeat something that was already successful for you?
Definitely. Yeah, because the way I see it, it's like, it's not end all be all. Like, I'm not going to just be like, this is the last album I ever do. Like, no, like, I'm going to be writing music until I'm like old as dirt if I make it that old. But yeah, I think when I was younger, I felt like this is the only time like anyone's ever going to hear it. And it's like, no, like the way that we can put music out now is like, you know, you can constantly be making music. I mean, people might not listen to it, but, you know, the ability of really just putting it out there is incredible now, you know.
There's no gatekeepers anymore.
No, it's just like a free-for-all. So I think it's important to just keep putting it out there, be persistent, and like just, you know, crank it out.
Do you guys plan on staying in Baltimore?
Actually, my partner and I are moving to New York, I think really soon, like March, if it all works out. So we're going to still do Black Sage long distance. It's been a lot easier just because it's the two of us. You know, he can send me stuff via email and so can I. And like, if we have tours, we'll just make it happen. Traveling's pretty easy from here to New York, so just hop on a bus. So I don't know if he might be planning on moving in like a year and a half out west, but until then, we're just going to, it's going to make it work.
Well, I'm glad we got you in here while you still live in Baltimore.
Yeah, I haven't really like said that, you know. I mean, I've told a couple people, but since we don't have a place yet, we're just sort of like, I think it's March 1st.
Why do you want to move to New York?
I've always wanted to live there. So it kind of seems like no time like the present. you know, our lease is up in February, and my boyfriend got a new job at this pizzeria managing it. So kind of figured, why not? Also, like, for me, music is like, there's just everywhere, you know, and I, instead of playing the same venues, you know, a few times a month to the same people, I can actually sort of spread myself out there, and I'm not oversaturating as I am here, I think.
Beyond the solo album and The Move, what's next for you and for Black Sage?
So we have a couple shows in February and March, but we're going to play on a couple small tours with Bond Street District and, you know, throughout the summer just do, I think mostly touring is the idea. Mostly East Coast, some South, and, you know, just ride the wave into the next year just by doing that and keep writing. So, I don't know, just keep playing shows.
Thanks for coming in, Josephine.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Josephine Olivia. Female Trouble comes out every Tuesday, and you can find it on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. As always, we'd appreciate it if you subscribed on iTunes and gave us a rating. You can find more on Twitter at FMLTrouble or at BaltimoreSun.com/FemaleTrouble. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty featuring TT the Artist. Thanks again, and we'll be back next week.